to all checkpoints. I'm looking for status on 99 Alpha, please, between Valley de Trinidad and Milling.
They race the clock in a land that defies time, sharing an adventure in a place where reality is on holiday.
It's the most beautiful place in the world. It's the most scary place in the world. And it's the most desolate, quiet place. You love it, you hate it, you love it, you hate it, you love it, you hate it. You don't want to be there, you want to be there. You know, it's like a girl that breaks your heart. I hate you, I never want to see you again. I'm sorry. Can I come over? You look up at the stars and there's no smog. You smell the ocean breeze, you hear the birds, you hear the whales, you hear the seals. I think Baja gives you that opportunity to feel that and get closer to something that's more instinctual.
It's difficult to put into words because it's an emotion. That's what Baja is, something you feel.
What do you call a race where anybody with any vehicle can enter? A race where 200,000 spectators come but no one pays admission. A race that takes 32 hours for 1,200 people to battle 1,000 merciless miles for a million different reasons. Call it the Ducati Score Baja 1000.
When someone asked Parnelli Jones, and he said it's like being in a 24-hour plane crash.
It's 1,000, so much can go on. I mean, think about what happens, you know, in the Daytona 500. And they're going around a smooth track. And the pit's in the same spot every time. You know, we cut buses and cows and horses and
mountains and beaches and deserts.
You're in dust, you're in rocks.
It's gullies, it's washouts, it's 100 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour.
So many roads out there and little ranches here and there. And
every one of these jumps, every one of these turns is different than the last one.
Tell you what, you don't fall asleep here.
I lived it, I ate it, I slept it. And I can totally understand when other people get caught up in the mystique of it, trying to beat time itself and get to the finish line. It's an unreal feeling.
It's only about 100 miles south of San Diego, but Ensenada is a whole other world, and the closer you get to it, the more confusing it becomes. Mouse had the inspiration and Fish gave his approval, but it was my good buddy Scott Waugh who convinced me to make this movie about the longest non-stop point-to-point race in the world. My name is Dana Brown, and when I thought I knew, I hadn't a clue.
Dana Brown. Dana just came out with Step Into Liquid. They are doing a feature called Dust to Glory on the Ducati Score Baja 1000.
That's Sal Fish. He's in charge. An honest promoter. Why not? This whole thing started with a stuntman nicknamed after a rodent.
Here's the odds. Hey, we're 3-1. Those guys, look at this. I'm 2-1 favorite.
This is Mouse, a real force of nature. Somehow you always end up doing whatever he's doing. Take his posse. One legend and two childhood friends. Also getting sucked into Mouse's orbit with the riders, Andy and Neil. Andy won the 1,000 last year.
Can you bet this?
Yeah, Caliente.
Yeah. Hey, Billy, you can bet this at Caliente.
Let's put some odds on ourselves.
Let's go bet on ourselves. I think in Mexico you can do that. It's not like, who's that guy, Pete Rose?
Seems like everybody enters the 1,000. They embrace everything here from Rolls Royces to Winnebagos. Winnebago didn't make it very far. These racers are from all walks of life, including the prodigal son, the Hawaiian surfer, father, son, and grandson, king of the Beatles, Team Estrogen, the perennial champs, the greatest ever, and those indie dudes.
They don't close the race course off for anybody. If you're out there with Joe Public, or in this case, Jose Public.
For the people of Baja, this is one of the biggest days of the year.
We can really relate to racing, off-road racing. And you meet people
You just start talking. Start talking about the last race, the next race. You remember this and you remember that. You end up with four or five guys around you, and that's called picking up dust during this time.
As the party atmosphere fades, all the contradictions and metaphors begin to make sense to me. This isn't about a race. It's about the race, the human race, which I figure is exactly how Salfish intended it.
The roads aren't closed. Locals driving backwards on the course. You've got locals racing right next to you. You've got chase vehicles, and they're on the course where they shouldn't be. You know, I mean, this is not for wusses. Let's face it.
Without question, Salfish is the Baja 1000. He marks a different course each year. He deals with the concerns of the ranchers, the police, as well as demands of contestants and spectators.
I haven't met anyone that has the stupidity, I guess, I don't know, that I have, that would do it the way I do. I never stop thinking about this. I mean, it's a 24-hour deal, and I love it. You have families together, and guys with a $10,000 vehicle and guys with a $2 million vehicle.
I could have never imagined having Sal Fish's job. Having 300 people like Robbie Gordon showing up there wanting to go racing, and everybody has their own agenda.
Everybody plays by the same rules. They all pay the same entry fee. I want to make sure our hardcore grassroots guys are always at score and there's a place for them to race.
Sal's values are reflected in a race that's open to everyone, from the little guy to the big guy, the famous and anonymous, all equal, all simply racers.
Muy buenos días, amigos nuestros, señoras y señores. Ensenada, la salida de esta Baja Escuela Internacional.
Pre-dawn, air temperature 45 degrees. Motorcycles and quads will start 3 hours ahead of the field. A flurry of flashbulb announces Johnny Campbell's arrival. A win today would be a record-breaking 7 in a row. Trying to keep loose with 62-year-old J.N. Roberts, a true legend in off-road racing.
Always got to keep moving. Harder target to hit.
Mouse arrived. He's very quiet, unusually subdued.
Mouse doesn't know this, but when I was a little kid, he was my hero. Go out smoking everybody. I was like, wow, this is Mouse McCoy. And all of a sudden, disappeared.
And I started racing when I was 4 years old. And by 17, I was just flat burned out. Nothing you could do about it. You don't have any context of what you're doing as a kid. All you know is you hate it. You're done. You're sick of it. That's the best thing that's ever happened to me, because now I love riding motorcycles more than ever, and maybe I wouldn't have loved it so much had I kept going.
For every bike, there's usually 3, 4, or 5 riders. Johnny Campbell would be riding the first 205 miles before handing it over to Steve Hengefeld. Jan would ride 110 before giving it to his son Jimmy.
Have a good day.
Mouse McCoy wouldn't run 100, 200, or even 500 miles. Mouse had a different plan. He was going to race the entire Baja 1000 solo. One man's name is synonymous for racing the Baja solo, the Iron Man, Ivan Stewart.
Well, to do a 1,000-mile race in a car is tough. But at least you can sit down, you get a drink of water, and you're protected a lot more. And to do it on a motorcycle, I can't fathom it. And that's tough.
I mean, anybody can trail ride the thing for the 1,000 miles, but to be competitive and do it was a whole different deal.
And I knew I looked up to him, and now, wow, I'm really going to look up to him if he finishes this thing. This is going to be amazing.
People say, don't you worry about your son. No, I don't worry about him because he's gifted, and he usually gets there.
I think Mouse is one of the best when it comes to preparing. He pre-ran down here more than anybody I've ever seen.
Supercross legend Ricky Johnson, who's like Mouse's big brother, had some reservations.
Not because he's a bad rider, he's a great rider. Not because he was out of shape, he was in great shape. But for those exact things, he knew how good a shape he was in, and he knew how fast he was. And I knew if he got into a competition with other riders that are fresh and fresh and fresh and fresh, I was afraid he's going to die.
At 6:30, the race began. They'll leave 30 seconds apart. 6:31 and 30 seconds, Johnny Campbell takes off. Chris Blaze, the Honda B team, leaves the line at 6:33. J.N. Roberts, 6:37:30. If a car pulls out in front of a speeding car, results are dented metal and possible injury. If a car pulls out in front of a speeding motorcycle, results are probable death. which was exactly the fate of former Baja champion Danny Hamill in 1995, only a few miles outside of Ensenada. Mouse McCoy, 6:37, and the rhythm of the race begins. At 6:46:30, the quads began to join the fray. Mark, Johnny Campbell had settled into his usual lead. And second was Chris Blaze of the Honda B team. Mouse, in an effort to show his newfound maturity, had gone from 16th to 4th in the first hour. For a motorcyclist to compete at the front of the pack, he has to fully commit. He has to hurl himself into the void. Mouse was on fire, and just as amazing was J.N. Roberts passing riders a third of his age until our camera helicopter got a little close and J.N. went down. We missed the shot, and 30 miles away, Jimmy Roberts had a sudden premonition that he'd miss his ride. If J.N. couldn't get back on the bike, their day was over. It didn't seem fair. J.N.'s a living legend, winner of the first Baja 1000 back in 1967. That was an era when as many as 3,000 riders would start a California desert race, and J.N. Roberts would win 27 in a row.
When I was growing up, of course, he was the man in the desert. And anytime we'd be out riding motorcycles and I'd do something that my dad thought was pretty good, he'd say, "Oh, all right, J.N., good job, J.N." So J.N. was this mythical figure in my mind. So when I had the chance to actually race with him, it was a pretty, you know, pretty awesome experience for me.
Now, hold on, let me show you where I said J.N.
First time back in 30 years to Baja for him. It's kind of exciting to go ride with him. He can't get seem to get the bike started, though.
Here.
New technology.
Jan won two of the first three Baja 1000s. He'd come back to team with Jimmy, who was racing in his first.
He just recently won the Vet World Championships, and now here he is 2 weeks later racing Baja. And then in January, he signs up for Social Security. Yeah. So he's had quite a, year.
Don't rub it in. Hey, social insecurity.
So, yeah.
J.N. didn't get a lot of time to reminisce about his past victories because Jimmy Mouse and Greg Tracy had him on a rigorous pre-run schedule. Pre-running is when you get to practice your section of the course. Now, in Mouse's case, all the sections were his section, so J.N. got to do a lot of pre-running.
I'll tell you what, the old butt the last few days has taken a licking.
No pun intended. We live in different states, so we don't see each other all the time. But when we do see each other, it's usually around a motorcycle, you know, based environment. And he's so, like compulsive disorder, kind of really goes over things over and over and over. And I can see myself when I'm by myself becoming that a little bit myself. So, I mean, I love you to death, but there's some of your habits that drive me crazy.
The role's reversed. I mean, it's just funny, you know. It's just the way it is. It's life. You know, look at McCoy. We've seen that yesterday with them.
Yeah, they have the same relationship, kind of. They're all kind of bagging on each other all the time. It's
like a couple old hens most of the time, you know?
What can you do about it? It's your blood. You know, they can't fire you.
Jimmy and Jan are less father and son. They're more like clones.
Well, I know I'm a lot more cautious than he is. I mean, I don't know one of these things. He just, you know, pin it, Dad. Well, I don't know what's over that hill. So I back off and roll it off a little bit because I'm going to go home and cut wood this winter. You know, I got things I got to do.
where he just got.
But you
got to
have
more,
a little faith,
you know,
and
well,
trust yourself.
I do trust myself, but that's still who I am. I just I don't have it that way, but I think that comes with doing a lot, you know, in age.
Jan may talk about getting old, but how many 62-year-olds can pick up a 300-pound motorcycle? No matter his age, Jan's a father, and he's not about to let down his son. By any standard, Jan Roberts is a true motorcycle legend. 50% of a legend is better than 100% of someone like me. When Jimmy finally got his turn, he took full advantage of it, getting all the way up to 8th place overall and not being passed for 300 miles. Jan's shoulder was possibly separated, putting in jeopardy the plan for him to ride the last 50 miles to the finish later that night. In the meantime, there was nothing to do but sit back and reminisce about the good old days.
A few of the old-time boys used to come down here, and but long before it was a race, just to see if they could get from Tijuana down to La Paz, and just to find your way was a chore.
You telegraph the time you leave, and you pick up the telegraph and check in your time when you get to La Paz. That's the only way you could document it. There wasn't anybody down here with helicopters flying in those days to follow us.
When promoter Ed Perlman announced plans for the inaugural Mexican 1000, race legend Malcolm Smith immediately thought of two things: get Jan Roberts for his partner and buy a map.
I tried to get him to read the guidebook so he'd know his way. He said, "I don't need any guidebook. I can always find my way."
On the day of the race, the press was told the first vehicle would arrive at San Ignacio, the halfway point, at around 5 a.m. Malcolm arrived at 5 p.m., a full 12 hours earlier, and 8 hours ahead of the next vehicle. As evening settled in, Jan began his journey, guided by a weak front headlight and a unique sense of direction.
I seen this light, and I thought I was going the right direction, and it was a star, and I just kept following. Look, I said, there's a checkpoint. It's got to be the checkpoint. Kept going on. I totally went to the other side of the coast, which I shouldn't have went to.
Out of gas, Jan managed to refuel at a local fishing village. He then crossed the entire peninsula one more time, where he ran out of gas again. He had traveled hundreds of miles and hadn't made an inch towards the finish line.
We found him sleeping under a cactus. He says, I don't have a clue where I am. Can I follow you in?
I think it took him, I don't know, 14 hours or something, but he slept 6 of them anyway.
I'll tell you what, I don't remember half of it.
It was the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, the 60s and 70s were real good to me.
Despite the nocturnal adventure, Jan and Malcolm would be crowned the inaugural motorcycle champions.
You know, as you go through life, if you knew you were making history, you would have paid more attention to it.
If one man legitimized the Baja 1000, it was Parnelli Jones. Winner of the 1963 Indy 500, his presence, along with fellow competitors Steve McQueen and James Garner, gave birth to the Baja Mystique. And over the years, everyone seems to have raced the Baja, but there's one notable exception who's never managed to make it. Until now, the greatest race car driver ever, Mario Andretti.
Great opportunity, and so happy that I did it because I got some taste of it.
Sal Fish invited Mario to be this year's Grand Marshal. His mere presence can make grown men act like school children.
Mario Andretti could have been anywhere in the world, and he was in Ensenada at the score of Baja 1000. That, to me, I'll never forget that. It was a highlight of my career.
Say the name Andretti, and I mean, that's speed. That's auto racing. That's it. And it's global. It's a universal word. Oh, he's the best. I love that guy.
I got to get the car heated up, my seat buffed, because Mario's coming. He's going to sit right there.
For Todd, this culminated years of hero worship, a chance to bond with his idol.
Mario's, I think, taking the bait. He's thinking, you know, I can do this.
I want you to drive it slowly, and I'm going to sit there.
Yeah, sure.
He took the wheel before Todd could cry for help. There's a very good reason the name Andretti is synonymous with speed. Because it's synonymous with speed.
Feeling the pre-run truck here, I could see how you could all of a sudden find yourself in a ditch upside down really easy.
All of a sudden he's pushing the thing pretty hard. We're on the right-hand side, stuff's going right by me.
said to him, hey, Mario, you got to slow down. I think there's some horses coming up. There weren't horses coming up, but I was just like, anything to get this thing slowed down.
What do you think of that?
What did you think of that? I loved it.
Todd's hyperventilating had stopped. Unfortunately, so did his truck. 20 miles from civilization.
We've got no battery.
Didn't go fast enough. Didn't go fast enough to charge the battery.
Eventually, a ride pulled up. The lady in the truck obviously didn't follow racing, but she knew a good head for hats when she saw one. The husband, on the other hand, knew instantly that the man carrying his dirty laundry was a living legend.
Chris and Sandy are my saviors.
The couple happily drove 20 miles out of their way, compensated with a mere autograph. Pure Baja magic. Everything goes wrong and then works out perfectly.
Geez, turned out to be the highlight of our day.
Well, you're the highlight of ours, too.
Mario couldn't get over the potential in off-road racing.
It's incredible, you know, what has been developed. But I keep saying, I mean, the imagination is the only limit.
These are for the rock stars of the Baja, the Unlimited classes, the big money race teams who use choppers for chase vehicles.
It's the most dynamic thing you can do. You have everything you want. You have 800 horsepower. You got 3 feet of suspension. You got a chromoly cage. You got a breathing apparatus. You got a co-rider telling you you need to do these different things. If you could look under macho in the dictionary, there'd be a trophy truck.
The racer most identified with the Baja 1000 is NASCAR driver Robbie Gordon.
I mean, this is his world. It isn't in NASCAR. This is his, where he's the king. And you can see everybody defer to him here.
Robbie was just a kid, and I took him for a ride out of Saddleback in one of the Blazers, and I can remember seeing his helmet up here, and he just loved it.
Robbie became Baja's boy wonder. He's gone on to make millions racing from Daytona to Indy, but he never forgets his roots.
I left Homestead on Sunday night, flew out with a helicopter, got on a commercial airliner, flew to L.A., left at 5 a.m. to come down here pre-ran. We pre-ran Monday and Tuesday, did the whole course in 2 days.
He was a little cocky, and, you know, probably hurt him in a lot of ways.
I know where everybody's at. I'm going to watch every car go by the wayside. The car's good enough that 75% is as fast as everybody else.
You know, a lot of good race drivers are cocky.
Numbers are drawn for starting position. Robbie got the last spot. While starting at the very front of the line was Hawaiian Alan Pfluger, his very first race in a trophy truck.
You can't really describe it. You've got to experience it. And it's just, it's awesome. It's a controlled explosion. It's like trying to hold a piece of dynamite. Keep the explosion in your hand. It gets hairy. It gets really hairy. But it's fun. It's fun on that line.
Because you don't look at the bumps, you just look at, you know, like a roar that you might come off this side and hit the other side.
have the ability to go so fast, but the challenge is to be smart enough to go slow enough to finish the race. Because any dummy can go out there and put their foot down and go fast. But you got to know when to lift and put that brake on.
The highways are open to all traffic during the race. Matter of fact, all the roads are. They have things like speed limits, but since it's a race and boys will be boys, most ignore them. After all, who's going to catch him? Well, the authorities were slightly miffed. But Pfluger immediately saw the error of his ways and turned state evidence and was deputized.
When we were listening on the radio to where the cars were, and I hear there's a bunch of cops have pulled over all the heroes in the sport, and they're on the side of the road having a donut convention.
And just like that, two of Baja's finest stopped 70 people and $50 million of race equipment. Meanwhile, behind them, the open-wheeled brother to the trophy truck, the Class 1 buggy, surged off the line. These vehicles are unlimited, meaning the engine size is unlimited, and so is the budget. Ranging between $300,000 and $1 million, these are expensive cars. If you win, $4,000, maybe. Behind the big money of the Class 1 buggies is a lot of heart. A quality best exemplified by an off-road racing dynasty, the McMillan family.
My dad and brother decided they were going to race one race in 1976 for the Baja 1000, just race it once, and then sell a car. Just say they did it, you know.
And when I was in that Class 9 with 8 inches of wheel travel, a 50 horsepower motor, I really thought I was going to win overall. I mean, I thought, I got a chance here.
At 74, Corky McMillan is still chasing his dream.
You know, people ask me today, with my age and everything, I said, well, the only person I really have to please is myself. And if I feel like I'm competing and doing good and hanging in there, I'm happy, I'm satisfied.
The McMillans are a successful family in more ways than one.
And I see Corky still line up to get a shower in the morning before the race, in a line at a campground behind all the guys that work in this company. And you can't tell which one's Corky and which one's driving nails the next day.
It makes us all have something in common to kind of get together with, and it's not the bosses and the employees. I mean, we're all just a bunch of people trying to have fun and enjoy life, and we're doing it.
He's had to miss a couple because of health reasons, but you know what? Take one race at a time, and the next race he was back.
My body thinks my brain's gone crazy.
The McMillan with the most championships is Mark. He's also one of the most successful drivers in the history of the Baja 1000, but it's been 14 years since his last victory.
There's ups and there's downs, but something that I've always taken from my dad and I'm trying to give my boys is you never, never, never give up. Whether if it's at work, or whether it's racing, or something you're trying to accomplish at home with your family, we just never, ever, ever give up.
Mark McMillan got off to a fantastic start, roaring for the first 80 miles, but once again, bad luck struck. At Ojos Negros, he'd have to change his entire transmission.
Way too early, way too early. It'll get us to be a long day. We'll get a finish out of it, that's for sure.
And off the line in Scott McMillan's buggy was a rookie driver, his 16-year-old son, Andy.
Ever since I was 2 or 3 years old, I used to go pyramiding with my dad. I started driving clutch when I was probably 6 or 7 years old.
I had a lot of trust in him as we, you know, developed our relationship driving and just taught him what I learned from my dad.
At first, Andy had little problems staying on course.
Watch it, remember there's a hole here, remember? Yep, stop. Stop!
I think about it, and I think when I have a kid, I mean, I'm never going to have, the trust that he has in me.
So take your time doing it.
But he settled down.
Go. You're running with the big dogs, boy.
The trust that Scott had in his son was well deserved. After a couple of wild rides early, Andy had gotten it together and was in first place in his class when he turned it over to his father.
Got it, you got it. Okay, make stuff.
While the McMillans have fun on the cutting edge of technology, there are those who enjoy something slightly more antiquated. This is Class 11, which gives a whole new definition to the word underdog.
You really get the satisfaction of talking to someone that races a trophy truck, a Class 1, motorcycles, looking at you and saying, you raced Class 11. Guy, you must be crazy.
Hey, those guys are the toughest guys out here. You know, they've got little support, you know, vehicles that are extremely challenging, and they go for it. That's the hardcore Baja racer right there.
These are unmodified Volkswagen Beetles. Not the new Beetle, but the old Beetle, pre-1982. No modification of suspension or engine is allowed.
We are losing our dashboard.
What they lack in speed, they more than make up for in passion.
It's a feeling inside of each one. We born no Bajas, and we die no Bajas too.
I think they're real men. I mean, there's some stuff that I have no idea how they get through.
Racing Class 11, it's very, very important to finish the race. Sometimes there are no signs left, time limit is sometimes very, very narrow for us. So it's very significant to go through whatever you have to go through and getting there, just getting there.
All you pick two guys, stand by, he's on his way, air clear.
Oh, looks like we're going right.
By noon, everyone had left the starting line, and racers began to settle into their groove, which isn't always a good thing.
End of a race. Isn't that a shame?
Yeah, that sucks, man.
That rock is what got me.
That just the average person who has a 9-to-5 job has 10,000 close calls over the course of a life. You know, it's the light that you run through, go through an intersection, and that split second later somebody runs a red light and goes behind you. You never even saw it. Down here, you're doing like all 10,000 in one day. I think when you get back home, after you do something like that, it's like slow-mo. Life is slow-mo. Everything else, that's no big deal. You know, you got a job interview or you're showing up for something big. Well, what's the worst thing that could happen? Somebody says no, you know, to a sales job. Well, I just almost got killed 40 times. So not really that big of a deal.
It's key to deal with adversity. Al Hogan uprighted his truck and was back in the race.
Right on, gotta roll over. Don't see the face, this one.
It's got lights in it, I guess.
Rides better than all it did before. Getting them shocks broke in from rolling it over.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
I don't know why you did that. Good thing there wasn't rock there.
Like I'm telling you, the back end is just softer. It's just too soft.
A good Baja racer is prepared for anything. Like number 560, who did a complete roll just outside of Ensenada. Unfazed, he straightened the windshield wipers out, and his daughter, who knew a thing or two about twist ties, got the door shut, and believe it or not, he finished the race 835 miles later, twist tie in place. Then you have the example of Team Hibachi, who opted for an impromptu pit stop to demonstrate two very distinct methods of firefight. The hyperkinetic smother method, which got the flame 60% contained, and the much more laid-back, low-altitude water drop. But there are those who are just not prepared, like this fella, who lost his gas cap.
There's a fire. It was about this wide when I looked back.
You got a gas cap?
We got something we could probably set up for you.
Hey, that's
there you go.
That'll work.
We got some tools that are salvageable in here.
You don't see help like this every day.
Need a flashlight?
Jason, I think you're going to be okay, my friend.
We're pretty sure he made it, despite some evidence to the contrary. There are things that are impossible to prepare for, like your engine falling off, sitting there, mocking you. Near the ostrich ranch, 15-year-old Kevin Enault was prepared, his video camera at the ready to shoot his Uncle Bob as he raced past. The ostriches were in shock. Even cars fly better than they do. It turned out that young Denault had the only footage of his uncle's wreck, which had taken place right in front of him, at the only place their paths would cross for 1,000 miles. What are the odds? Probably about the same as being eaten by an ostrich. The buggy wasn't prepared to stop in the middle of the road, and the Volkswagen wasn't prepared for such a little room. Neither were prepared that the buggy would start from the bumpers touching, and that the Volkswagen wouldn't start. Then a good Samaritan came along, waved along the truck, which got its fender ripped off, thus starting the Volkswagen. A pattern had begun to develop. There's one element that is more fear and loathe than any other. Silt.
Silt is bottomless talcum powder. When you get home, silt still comes out of your eyes and your nostrils for 2 and 3 days later.
You can't fathom what Baja is until you've experienced it. Explaining silt to someone, that you hit it and you can't see anything and you have to keep your foot down. And I thought I had it all figured out. The first time I hit silt, I was going, oh my.
Like, don't let off the gas. Whatever you do, do not let off the gas.
In Baja, everyone agrees about two things. Silt sucks, and you should never question authority. The civility displayed by the racers during the trophy truck debacle had convinced the police to let them off with a stern warning and an escort off the highway. Now, for some reason, Mark Post decided starting second wasn't asking too much. Mark Miller, already in second, wasn't buying it. So Post decided to settle for starting third. Third place Hirsch was indignant. A feud had begun. Ironically, the roadblock and police escort had erased the 30-second gaps used at the start of the race, which meant a concern for safety would spawn a 20,000-horsepower free-for-all. Pfluger, who had already been crowned the season champ in the Pro Truck class, was making his debut in a trophy truck, and shocking everyone, he was running away with it.
Go, 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 Pfluger, go!
Running second through Valle de Trinidad was Mark Miller and Ryan Arciero. Mark Post had been knocked back to sixth place by vengeful Hertz, though not for long. He was roaring back, hell-bent on getting even. Bouncing past Dan Smith, terrible Hertz lies ahead. They hit Valle de Trinidad like something out of the Book of Revelations. Through the center of town, side by side at over 100 miles an hour. Amazingly, no one was hurt. Just some metal got bent. The racer's calling card.
The only way people know in off-road racing that cars behind you come up and give them a little bump in the back and they kind of move over because they know a faster vehicle's behind them. If they don't move out of the way, take them for a ride.
You don't know fear until you look in the rear view and see Robbie Gordon.
Got 10 on your tail, should be catching up to you pretty quick here.
Everything that's been gone wrong.
Robbie had gotten a flat, but his pit crew was unprepared, putting Robbie in full tilt. He blazed through 30 miles on a flat tire and nearly being in first place before finally getting it changed. While the trophy trucks and Class 1 buggies represent the power and glamour of the Baja 1000, the true symbol of victory is the motorcycle, specifically a motorcycle ridden by Johnny Campbell and Steve Hengefeld. The 6 straight overall titles, Johnny and Steve stand atop a mountain with seemingly nowhere to go but down.
The pressure of winning is always there. And when you win,
several times in a row, not only do you want to do it again for yourself, but you know, when you got a corporate company like, you know, Honda, let's say, for with Johnny and Steve, they want them to win, and they know that.
You don't see it the way you used to see it when you used to look up, you know? You know you've conquered it, you've won it, and you just want to win another one.
You expect it. You just expect it. Anything less, unacceptable.
To beat the elements, to have the equipment stay together, there's really a lot of things against you. I mean, I've bounced off of front ends of cars, I've bounced off of fences, I've bounced off of cattle. You know, it's a little bit like Russian roulette.
After he won his 10th Baja 1000, Larry Rosser decided to stop competing for the overall title on a motorcycle. He felt his time was due. The next year, Danny Hamill, starting in Rosser's traditional spot, would have his fatal accident.
There is certain risks you take. You can't live in a box, or you're just going to run from everything.
How do you let him do what he does? And I said, one, we make our living at it. Number two is, the day I tell him that he can't, he's going to die in a car accident going up the 405 to Torrance. You know, I mean, when it's your day, it's your day.
He's expecting Honda one accident.
Like everything else in Baja, communication is difficult. It can take a while to hear bad news.
A new front axle and a new front wheel. Do you copy?
I copy. A new front axle and a new front wheel.
That's affirmative. He had a problem early on and clipped a big boulder. Had to change the front wheel once already, but the axle's tweaked and this wheel's wobbly, so he'll need to, just like I say, make it right.
Johnny had dislocated his thumb, and all he wanted to do was turn the bike over to Steve and assess the damage. Only 2 minutes behind came Chris Blaze of the Honda B Team. For the first time in years, Johnny's lead was tenuous. He'd tape his hand and be ready for the next leg. Unfortunately, there are accidents that require more than gauze and tape. That's when it's time for the weatherman. From a repeater station atop Mount Diablo, Bob Steinberger is the eyes and ears of the race.
Score up, score up. Copy, weatherman, I have an emergency.
For over three decades, Steinberger's been head of communications for the 1000, a job he does for free.
In the early 70s, he was doing relays, and he was putting up an antenna with weather balloons, and someone called him the weatherman, and it stuck. You know, my dad's 65 years old. He climbs to the top of this 50-foot tower on top of an 11,000-foot peak and puts his antenna up, and right over, it's like a 5,000-foot drop down a sheer mountain, and it's crazy. I mean, he's a great guy, and he loves this sport.
We have an injured driver at race mile 55.
Weatherman, square helicopter. Okay, we have two back injuries. We are transferring the first one right now to Ensenada. Weatherman, could you contact operations, advise the hospital?
Weatherman, spectator hit by motorcycle, no pulse, so we need immediate transfer.
I heard somebody would say they had a spectator with no pulse. I have no comeback on that yet.
Weatherman, that's affirmative. 26.9, spectator hit by motorcycle, no pulse.
Okay, this is an emergency. Stand by, everybody. Spectator hit by a motorcycle at 26.9, no pulse.
Rescue 1, copy. Helicopter zero,
ready. ETA approximately 17 minutes.
Score helicopter, copy weatherman.
We copy, weatherman, so we'll be on our way here. It's going to be an ETA of probably about 20 minutes or so.
Weatherman.
I don't know what to do at this time.
The spectator that died wasn't hit by anyone in the race or any vehicle in the race, but by another spectator on a motorcycle going the wrong way on the course.
My biggest fear is not me tearing up the truck, me getting hurt. It's me killing some kid, me swapping out and going into the group of people, or some guy pulling a truck out and I bounce off of him and kill these people that weren't doing anything. But why quit what you love for a situation? I mean, you don't quit driving on the road because somebody gets in a car accident and dies. I mean, I'm not going to stop flying because of 9/11. Do I feel anguish for it? Yeah. I don't ever want that. I don't want that for anybody. But I can't stop my life because of it.
They don't understand. I don't understand. I just do it. Yeah.
The weatherman knows death is neither fair nor just, and there's nothing to do but to go back to work.
Concerned
that he gets checked out to make sure he's all right or other problems.
Everything will be fine.
Great. Brian passes along a thank you to you.
Fortunately, there would be no more fatalities. Jet boat Greg Tracy, Mason, and son Chad were on a mission. They wanted to get to race mile 205 and set up pits in plenty of time for Mouse, who is now in third place.
No, I hear a tractor.
Ricky Johnson, slated to race that night in a pro truck, stopped on by to see if he could help.
He's a mile and a half
coming out. Coming up on five minutes, so we got two more minutes to sweat.
Senior McCoy seemed nervous, although he denied it at every turn.
Good look, Rick.
He's trying to go for that whole retro, I'm chilling, I'm not nervous look. And the EM, Aaron's man. Because they go, nothing other than a married man would ever wear that.
It could mean every chick, man.
Don't put that in the show. That's him.
That's it.
Ricky Johnson decided to pitch in and give Jetboat a hand.
As I'm doing the tire change, he's in my ear going, slower's faster, slower's faster. And that just gave me chills. A seven-time national champion, a hero, a god to a lot of people, is helping me do a tire change.
They didn't?
Nope, you're 13 miles up to the Honda pit.
Okay.
Right.
Good, bro.
Relax. You got 1,000 miles to go ride. You need to just relax and chill. No, I'm good. Don't try to win. I'm not.
You guys at 319.
You know, he's giving me the answer that I want to hear. I watch him take off. You know, I say a prayer. You know, we go down to Mexico as a band of brothers.
The Baja is a family affair, passed down from one generation to another.
My dad always talked about Baja 1000, Baja this, Baja that. Wow, that'd be neat, you know.
You know, I had a road-type family, and we rode motorcycles, we surfed. My father suddenly passed when I was 16, and a point in time where a boy kind of needs some direction and stuff, and my mom was there. She saw that we wanted to race, and so she supported us.
The boy was a Honda factory and stuff. We used to run it up and down, do all the pits ourselves, so it was fun.
In Mexico, Johnny Campbell is the hero. Even more than the charismatic Robbie Gordon, it's Campbell's posters that can be found from Tijuana to Cabo San Lucas. He takes this responsibility seriously, as he's very aware of the impact his heroes had on him as a kid.
You are his idols.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you just got to step out of the element for a little bit, think about what's really going on. So, you know, I thought the best thing I could do is just give the kid a jersey.
That's not a replica or something that can be bought in a store. It's the real thing, a Johnny Campbell race jersey. Johnny Campbell's a good man. His father would be proud. His mother is. Women in general have had a big impact in Baja, including this year, with the BC10, an all-woman team comprised of the wives and daughters of other racers.
We were kind of on the sidelines last year, and all the guys were out there racing, and we kind of all looked at each other and we're like, why are we standing here? Why aren't we out there racing?
My sister raced, my mother raced. They had enough girls at that time where they raced a class that was called Powder Puff, and they would race after the guys raced, and whatever cars were left over, and go out and race each other. And honestly, by the time I came along, they just didn't have that anymore, and I was determined I was going to race. Here I am, still racing. All of us know that we have to get the car to the next one, and, you know, to finish first, you have to first finish.
I think also women have this image of not being good drivers, but we always tell people on the tours that the women tend to do better than the men because we don't have, like, that ego behind us.
Exactly.
Like, something to prove.
Women will ask for directions.
A lot of times you're taken as a joke until you go out and show that you're not a joke. You know, you're taken very lightly.
Call BCA and tell them we're on their ass.
Catch.
I'll hit them when I have to.
Okay.
The horn was my job. As soon as we were about getting close to someone, that was my job to hit the horn, warn them, and Becky sure ran them.
Okay. I think they must know I'm here.
Oh, yeah. We all have someone that we're competing against that we're related to. And I think that's pretty uncommon that a family can come together and support each other, even though they're competing against one another.
We started off bonding when they were just that high by skiing together. But what it really does is that it makes you friends. And if you're friends, you got respect. And that makes for a great family.
I've always had that competitive edge. Hopefully beat my husband out there, so that'd be nice.
Actually having my wife compete in the event this year meant more than I ever thought it was. She's happier, healthier. She's more just full of herself. Bob Sutton putting together the girls' team happens to be one of the biggest moves that I've had in my little career down here.
Families compete as well as friends. When the Honda helicopter informed Steve Hengefeld that his lead had been cut in half, Steve didn't even ask why. He knew his friend, Andy Greider, had gotten on the bike. Andy, Steve, and Johnny had been teammates the previous year on the Honda A-Team. He was one of the defending champs.
It's probably the highest notch on my wall right now, besides being a father. You know, it's right under being a father.
A corporate decision bumped Andy from the A-Team just 2 weeks before the race. He and his father, Neil, were headed home when Chris Blaze asked if he wanted to race on the Honda B-Team.
It's not about the race. It's about being down here, having fun, being with your family. And when I say family, I mean the whole community of off-road racing. And once I figured it out, everything started clicking and the race just went smooth from that.
So it doesn't matter if you're racing off-road or playing the piano. You try, you give your best to life, and when you have a son that does that, it brings me to tears sometimes. I mean, I'm so proud of him.
Andy and Neil had a plan, proved the folly of leaving Andy off the A-Team. They wanted to lead the race, not just on time, but physically, so they would be making first dust. Through checkpoint 4, Andy had been reeling Steve in. The once 4-minute lead had shrank to 30 seconds.
It took me probably 50, 60 miles for my arms to loosen up, but in that time I was catching Steve. I could see the helicopter getting closer and closer, and then all of a sudden I was in his dust. And, okay, just take it easy. Let the pit strategy get you in the lead and see what happens after that.
If the rear tire holds, the impossible can be achieved, and Andy will be at the front of the entire Baja 1000 field.
The bikes are on the highway. There's about 30 seconds split between 1X and 11X.
Knowing that Andy had started behind him, Steve has no choice except to pin it. And that's going to tear his tire up, which is okay with him because he knows he's getting a new tire at this pit. What he didn't know was that we were running a different tire compound.
Andy didn't only want to take the lead, he wanted to keep it. But the first place he led was the last place he wanted to, the silt fence, where a motorcycle can be swallowed whole. He took a center line, held it wide open, and prayed. Andy headed for the coast as fast as he could go. Johnny took the perfect line. He knew where every nook was and every cranny. As luck would have it, one of the few witnesses of this race was the man who cut Andy from the Honda A-Team. He's riding in that helicopter. While the course is marked, there is sometimes certain creativity, although you do run the risk of missing a checkpoint because the checkpoints are kept secret.
A lot of racing down here is doing your homework. Part of Baja is a lot of free running. I had some alternate ways and lines and stuff, and if I had to use them, I would.
At the top of the screen is Andy's dust cloud. For Johnny, that's like a red cape to a bull. He's flat out at 110 miles an hour, one kelp pocket or tide washout, and his day ends in a heartbeat. Andy holds his lead. Miles later, Johnny tries it again. Coming up on the left-hand side of the screen, Andy Ryder neck and neck with Johnny Cannon. Andy holds the lead and will all the way to the highway. Today is his day. At this point in the race, Andy had battled the 1X bike for over 200 miles and seemed beyond comprehension. Neil had set up Andy's pit 12 miles down the road from the Honda A-Team. For Johnny, this was the end of the race. Steve would ride the next 350 miles to the finish.
Low mark on the oil. Low mark,
we need oil.
Oil.
Andy was finished as well. Chuck Dempsey would take over the bike.
You're probably going to need pads and both ends. Hey, my radio ain't working. I can't hear Bruce. Hang on, hang on.
Steve was off. He had 12 miles of pavement before he hit new dust.
All you got to do is... They're off.
Keep tight.
Go.
Good job.
Make some dust,
buddy. Make some dust, Chuck.
Steve Hengefeld, the best night racer in the world, was flat out. Trying valiantly, Chuck Dempsey could not close the gap, but it didn't matter, because for an afternoon, Andy Ryder had accomplished the impossible.
I had what I would consider a few moments that I felt greatness when I raced. A lot of people, if you ask them, if you say, okay, break it down, what was your best race? And it might not be they won, but they had a moment that you're so present, and everything is happening flawless and effortlessly. And outside is utter chaos. But that chaos is around them, and they're sitting in the middle of the tornado, the eye of the storm. You make a correction before a reaction starts. They're not scared. They're not afraid. They don't think they can be hurt. You don't have time to be afraid. Afraid's afterward. You know, it's like, man, I avoided death once again.
father and his son, an icon and his legacy. An epic race witnessed mostly by Cactus. No TV, no adoring crowds, just the clarity of the moment. A clarity that can give a racer a greater appreciation of place and of people. An awareness of the give and take, the golden rule. For six-time champion Malcolm Smith, giving back is more important than any victory. One of Malcolm's favorite things to do is to visit a little community just outside of Trinidad. He and his son Alex bring their bikes and buggies and give the local kids a thrill.
How can I give back to Baja some of the enjoyment I've had? We started donating time and effort and money about 8 years ago here. They only had a little bit of one house then when we first started here.
No, it's really fun. We come down here every year, and I've been seeing kids here for 8 years now. And it's kind of nice to come down here and see them over and over again.
2 days after we filmed this, Malcolm, Alex, and a dozen of Alex's classmates poured the foundation for a library to be built right there on Turn 4. The kids truly appreciate the time and attention the Smiths give them. Being orphans, they know it's not always available.
They are all from Mexicali, Tijuana, Ensenada. And we have a few from the local town, Valle La Trinidad.
It brings tears to my eyes, thinking of these kids being abandoned on the streets of Mexico, and now to think what they have here, what opportunities they have here.
To me, that's the most important thing about Malcolm. He wants to be here. He wants to feel what it's to be with our kids and, you know, spend some time and, you know, give them some joy. Not only the bunk beds they receive, not only the water pump they receive, or all the things they have because of Malcolm Smith.
I learned lessons from him. Like, you can never quit down here, because if you do, it's a major problem for you. You can never quit on any race. Because then, I mean, somebody else might have the same problem you do, and they might quit. But if you don't quit, you might win.
Among the original Baja racers, giving back is an unspoken tradition.
Baja has a magic to me. I can be kind of sick and have a backache and come down here and ride my motorcycle and be free, and I feel better right away. I mean, the farther you get away from the civilization on these really back roads, the more the magic is.
The back roads of Baja are endless, and the beauty can be found in the most unusual places. Take Coco's Corner, a kingdom built from what's been left behind. Old beer cans and bent motorcycle frames, the unexplainable, the bizarre, and the long forgotten. This is a place where a man's dream only needs one leg to kick reality's rear. Of course, Coco wouldn't tell you anything like that, because for him, this is just his place, and everybody is invited.
Okay, you can go inside and camping, please. Yeah, this is free. I don't charge nobody.
15 years ago, Coco was a valet in Ensenada when a car accident took his leg. Soon after, bound to a wheelchair, his supposed friends took his self-worth.
I want to stay in Ensenada. And everybody, he close. He said, you too old, you sick. So that's why I come in here. That's why I opened this place 13 years, 5 days.
So Coco's Corner is a ticked-off plan B. Buy a little campground just outside of nowhere where the 1,000 races pass every now and then. And in time, the pre-runners and pit crews stop by, and Coco has them sign this book, Ride or Draw, as long as you make your mark. Coco has created an off-road oasis, a kingdom where nothing is disposable, and the only thing that outnumber the beer cans are his friends.
How are you, my friend? Thank you for coming back again.
While he's never competed in the race, Coco embodies the spirit of the Baja 1000.
Good luck, everybody.
Baja has a wonderful way of just grabbing a hold of you.
And you're just looking around going, wow, where's all this coming from, you know?
Actually, we have stopped just to look around.
They battle a peninsula, a place between the Old West and the Twilight Zone. They challenge it not for money or fame, but for simple bragging rights.
During the
Second World War, President Roosevelt turned to the Mexican government and said, we want to put guns along the coastline to protect ourselves from the Japanese. Could we not put a little paved road down the length of Baja? Well, Mexico is neutral. So they said no. So that was the end of that. Just imagine if they'd put in a paved road, the length. If they had said yes, maybe we wouldn't be sitting here. There wouldn't be any off-road racing.
It's a long, tough day. Race for an afternoon in the Baja, and you'll have a year's worth of stories. At least that's the case for Mike and Robbie Groff and IndyCar champion Jimmy Vassar. Vassar has a relationship with the Groffs a lot like Larry Fine had with Moe and Curly Howard.
He said, for sure, I knew it was Robbie Gordon. And when he finally caught and passed it, it was like a truck full of Mexican
people. Oh, no! Adelaide!
My earliest memory of the Groff brothers was in Columbus, Ohio at the Grand Nationals in 1974.
At 8 years old, he was already a stud. He has this leather racing jacket, but he has this patch with Wile E. Coyote holding the Roadrunner by his neck, and it said, beep, beep, my ass. And I said, I gotta know this guy. And here we are.
Last year's 1000 was their debut as a team. A series of problems led to Vassar getting in the car at sunset while the light bar was still 100 miles away.
And I jumped in the car with no lights, and the sun was going down, no moon or nothing. You know, like a Toyota pickup looked like they were inebriated. We're honking the horn at me trying to go around. That's how slow I was going. And I'm in the race, right? And eventually we found a stop, and I borrowed two lights off of the paraplegic Israeli team, I swear to you. But he said, I'll give you that one and that one. So I got them and I rigged them on the front. I had two lights to go like 100 miles and with no front brakes, I might add.
No.
I had to have a Learjet pick me up. I had to abandon the race. I had a Learjet pick me up in the Bay of L.A. on a dirt strip because I had to get back to this kart banquet. They wouldn't let me get out of it, otherwise they wasn't going to give the prize money for the season. It was a nightmare. I slept in the runway in the desert. I started reminiscing, I started looking back, thinking about it, and started telling stories that to my friends what happened. I thought, I had a great time, you know. I finally realized it took a couple months for me to figure it out. I had a great time.
Unfortunately, this 1000 would give the Groffs and Vassar many more stories. Electrical problems ended their day before the sunset. Others had problems too, like Mouse McCoy, who got a flat tire and had to ride on it for 40 miles to get a spare. Still, he forged ahead, mile after mile.
11 hours straight at that kind of pace, physically, yeah, it's tough, but more so mentally, because you don't want to make a mistake, especially at night. You know, they might find you the next day. So it just really mentally just wears you down.
That's him. Reaching the halfway point of the race, Mouse was greeted by Jet Boat and crew, plus Andy and Neil Grider, who waited to see how he was doing.
Got a flat coming off the beach. I had to ride for 40-something miles till I got it to Catalina, and then I scrounged the wheel off some dudes.
I'm having a little bit of problems with my hands, Greg.
Yeah.
They're really like this.
Fresh gloves and goggles if you want them.
Yeah, I need a fresh.
Oh, not far back. Eight came through here not long ago.
Who?
Eight and 449s just passed a minute ago.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I'll get them back. Ago. Hey, I lost like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I was third overall. Gonna pass the guy. Started what, 16th or something like that, and I was gonna pass the third overall.
I was in the whoops.
Huh? I'll get him in the whoops. But I'm feeling it.
Keep yourself hydrated and take it easy. You're doing great.
I was in third, Neil, almost.
I know, that's okay. You're doing fine. You'll get it back. He's right up there. Don't worry. It's only half over. Mouse remembered something important to tell Andy.
I had to ride for 40-something miles till I got at the Catadina, and then I scrounged a wheel off some dudes.
I'll get him back. Hey, I lost like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I was third overall, back gonna pass the guy.
He's telling you a story.
He was a click out of delirious.
The mic's running, telling you a story. It was great.
Okay, I got 4 more seconds. I have a great story. Yeah. You're going to love this.
The pit crews are the backbone of the Baja 1000, guys like Jet Boat.
I was on IndyCar teams for years, RC Arrows. At Indy, changing a tire close to the wall, the car coming in at 120, your adrenaline's pumping for about 15 seconds, and then it leaves. You're done. This race, just all the planning and preparation and wondering where Mouse is at, your adrenaline's pumping for about 24 hours. And it's just the most amazing high that you can ever be on in your life.
While Jet Boat chases Mouse, others wait for their racers. These are the pit crews of the Big Money Unlimited classes. Their surroundings are like a gearhead Xanadu, and they live like firemen, ready whenever for whatever.
We may drive by and just wave and say, hey, thanks for being here. But if we need something, they're there.
You could not be a mechanic working full-time in a racing business if you didn't love it. And they just, you know, it's almost an addiction.
You're coming down here, the truck's only going to be here for like 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Done, and we're done.
Yeah.
We're packing up. Jesus. You got to find something to do. Go all this way, got to do something.
Idle hands can be the devil's playthings. Pit crews are forced to amuse themselves for hours on end. As night falls, a full 25% of the field has dropped out, and many pit crews' jobs are just beginning. But for Jimmy Roberts, his day is over. He's gotten his team back into the top 10.
Get up. Your work is done. Good job, bro.
My dad crashed.
Greg Tracy would take over the bike and take it the next 300 miles into the night.
It's only half over.
Yep.
And Greg's a hell of a night rider. If my dad's there, I'm sure he'll take it in at the end, but if he's not, he's going to have to ride it in.
Good job, man.
Yeah.
Good job, brother.
Thanks, man.
Give me your helmet.
Jet Boat and crew are headed back to Ensenada with one obstacle. The first 15 miles of their trek back was on a live course. They were going 50 miles an hour headed north, while coming at them were trophy trucks at 140 miles an hour.
And their lights are so bright that you can't see. And those roads are so tight that you literally have to just close your eyes. And it's like a spaceship passing on the road.
Around dusk, first automobile in the race, Alan Pfluger pulled into the pits. His front end was coming off. They tried welding everything to it. Wrenches, golf clubs, whatever it would take. 45 long minutes later, after being passed by 5 different cars, Pfluger's day had turned for the worst. But the Hawaiian kept an even keel and remained positive. Down the road, Robbie Gordon pulled into his pits like a tornado pulling into a trailer park. His crew looked ready to run screaming into the night, but Robbie's not the kind of guy to stand back and whine at people. He jumped right in there, busting his knuckles and shouting at the top of his lungs. It's the kind of insane intensity you can't help but admire. Off went Robbie, raging into the night, playing the beast to the beauty of the all-woman team. They'd been in first place in their class until their transmission failed, leaving them stranded in the pits, looking far too clean, too cute, and too composed.
When do you guys think you'll be pulling back into Ensenada?
As the night progresses, things just get weirder. The crowds don't dwindle but increase. They come in droves. The later it gets, the more people show up.
It's 4:30 in the morning. We're off in the middle. We're nowhere near any road. And people are out there, you know, with their coolers, their little barbecue, a little fire going, cheering you on all night long.
Since elementary school, our families took us there. So it's very, very important for us that people still are waiting for us. So we have a lot of good reactions, like VFG. They make, like, bets. Is it going to make it? Is it not going to make it? And when we get there, they start like celebrating and stuff, and they really pump you up to keep going.
The Volkswagen is painfully far behind, which for them is right on schedule. Meanwhile, at the other end of the race, Mouse amazingly was still going strong. Scott Dunleavy, was now in charge of his pits, and he brought with him racing legend Eddie Mulder to surprise Mouse.
Just trying to keep him focused. You know, he was very tired at that point, and he got some food in him and got some liquids in him, and, you know, he's complaining about his hands.
I've been trying to gather those guys back up for a while, man. I was pretty bummed out. First law, 40 miles on a rear flat.
Pushed it to third overall,
you're rocking,
man.
Dude, you're rocking it out.
I feel strong, but my wrists go numb. They can lock up. That's my issue right now.
I had to shake that flat off, Molly. Now it works your brain out. I had to slow it out. Hey, I lost like 45 minutes. Yeah, I was third overall. That could have passed the guy.
Go get him, Mouse.
Dunleavy and Mulder would chase Mouse on his journey to the finish line.
He's a little wrung out, huh?
Yeah, he's pinging.
On Mont Diablo, the temperature dropped to freezing and the wind was blowing 50 miles an hour. All hell was breaking loose. The nearby observatory started to complain about the light that was leaking from the weatherman's tent, threatening to ruin experiments that had been going on for a quarter century. So the weatherman put his assistant on the 30-gallon trash bag duty. Meanwhile, Robbie Gordon's day continued to unravel.
Why is Robbie stopping here?
Because he ran out of gas, like half a mile back.
We've got one pissed off driver, and we're hoping that he stops, and if he doesn't, we're going to have to chase him to the next pit. It hasn't been a good day.
Again, Robbie disappeared into the darkness, joining a long list of things to be feared in the Baja night.
When you're a little kid and the coat rack turns into the monster, you know there's something under your bed. Well, when you're in Baja on a motorcycle by yourself, there is, you know.
You're driving at night, when you see a forest of cactus, I mean, they're absolutely just flying by you, and these things look like they're alive. They look like they're talking to you, you know.
I went to go to the bathroom, so I left the car running, and then my ears were starting to hurt, and then I saw like a light, and then I told this kid, check out this light. It's like a flying saucer, it's only a ear floating. But it was a real one, you know, very close, like a block from here. But he was very, very, very scared. And I was too, yeah.
Strange lights can be disconcerting. No lights can be downright depressing. That's what happened to Andy McMillan, with his lead so great that when engine problems slowed him, he checked the rear view and didn't see a flicker.
And then they got disoriented out there and thought maybe that they were lost. And we got on the radio with him and said, Andy, just put trust into your GPS.
Out of left here. Got a buggy on the side. All right.
10-7, you're 14 hours. Okay, you're the most important guy on the course right now.
A storm atop Mount Diablo seemed to engulf the whole peninsula. The epicenter now located at the aptly named Zoo Road. Hit pit 11, he didn't talk about the usual 40 miles he'd spent getting another tire or how he'd been in third place overall. Instead, he had a very specific question. How far ahead was the bike in front of him? That was third place.
I'm going to get back to my goal, which was being on the podium. I really wanted to get on the podium solo.
He had about 30 miles up in the mountains, came back down, picked up like three spots, hauling ass. I mean, here's a guy that's blowing bubbles, and he just picked off two guys that were fresh.
Through checkpoint 12, Mouse was only 60 miles away from the finish line in Ensenada. He was about to make the impossible possible. Broken ribs, slight shoulder separation, broken finger. In danger of being run over, Mouse crawled to the shoulder.
Baja has a way of educating you. Push that edge that far down there, and you're done.
It was around 5 in the morning when Robbie Gordon, who'd stayed in the race on sheer fury, finally had to admit defeat.
If we were to continue down through the big bumps we were at in San Felipe, we'd basically break the back half of the truck off with it slamming as hard as it was slamming. We made a unanimous decision to load the thing on the trail, and that was probably one of the hardest things to do, especially all the hard work that the whole team put into getting to the Baja 1000. If you can't win, you at least want to finish. And this year's 1000, we didn't finish.
A driver will often work up to 8 hours to get back in the race. When he sees the trailer, it's a feeling of embarrassment and emptiness. Why do they do it?
It's not because you're crazy or you got a death wish. It's competition. Fighters don't fight to hurt people, they fight to win. Racers don't race because they want to die, they want to go fast. That's my high. That's the way I manipulate my life, is through mechanics of a machine.
Off-road racing is chasing rainbows. It's not like Indianapolis, where if you did something, you'd get something for it. All you're doing down here is just endangering yourself for the glory.
When you first start racing, the first thing you want to do is to win a race. And then you want to win a championship. Then you want to win the Baja 1000. You want all these things. And then there's going to be some day when you're probably going to win your last race. And probably 5 or 6 miles from the end, I kept thinking, gosh, I wish it would go on. You know, because I don't want it to come to an end. Give me another mile. Give me another half mile. You know, I want this feeling just a little bit longer, you know.
Race's end, 27 vehicles will have placed first in their individual classes, but only one will be fastest overall. This is the domain of legends like Stewart, Rossler, Smith, and Evans, and this year's winner belongs with that company. Approaching the baseball stadium, his name being announced for the seventh year in a row with a time of 15 hours, 39 minutes, and 52 seconds.
Until you experience it, you can't really explain it because it's just so great.
It has so much mystery and experiences and the stories we get out of it. And it's a lifetime of experience, each and every one.
The second fastest motorcycle was the Honda B team that included Andy Greider. John Gregory was fastest on the quad. The fastest on four wheels was the Class 1 buggy of Doug Fortin, while Ryan Arceo crossed the line with the quickest trophy truck. But the most impressive story on four wheels was that of 16-year-old Andy McMillan. A high school junior who'd just gotten his license 3 months earlier, Andy finished second in class and sixth overall. The most impressive debut since Robbie Gordon, 18 years earlier.
Proud of you. You did a great job.
Great job. Terrific, you guys. What a great family. Honor to have you guys with us.
I had a friend tell me today that in Baja, if you're dumb, you better be tough.
Having survived 300 miles of the faulty headlight, Greg Tracy's arrival meant JN was back on the bike.
Well, if we get third, we'll be good.
Well, whatever we get, dude, we had no freaking light.
Jimmy didn't need to worry because his dad had been within 2 blocks of the stadium for quite a while. He couldn't find the entrance. When he did make it, a victory towel wrapped around his neck just like the old days, well, it was 1967 all over again.
But that's what happened the first time, so it's only fitting.
Some things are timeless.
here he is standing there, you know, 30 years later. He had that smile, and then you could feel the excitement of there he was, you know, at the finish line, 1,000. And gosh, again, he could be any place in the world and doing anything he wants to do. And there he is.
You meet your Social Security check now.
A little past 5 in the morning, the number 227 of Matt and Steve Scaroni collected the win in the Pro Truck class. After a dozen tries, the father and son team had finally done it. They gave a lot of the credit to the third driver, Ricky Johnson.
You fall back to the little kid in the underwear and the 6 guns and the cowboy hat. You're a cowboy.
At sunrise, 2/3 of those cowboys were still out in the course. Some as far back as the halfway point, like number 806 of Todd Wiley and Mark Julian, who'd had a rotten night. They'd lost a transmission, lost a front end, simply got lost, but could not lose Jethro the Know-It-All.
Never finished a 100-mile race, never finished a 500-mile race. Come down here, how's he going to finish a 1,000-mile race?
Mark Julian, in an attempt to lose his publicist Jethro, was off and running. And then a funny thing happened. A race broke out for 195th place. The buggy's race strategy is hard to figure. After closing a half-mile gap in a matter of minutes, he simply locked on the rear bumper and stayed there as if hypnotized. And the one chance he had to make a pass, he saw open air and it scared the hell out of him. He went right back to his happy place. After hitting the straightaway, the buggy couldn't keep pace with Julian in the truck. And where it had taken 20 hours to finish the first half of the race, it only took him a mere 8 hours to come into the finish. Julian and Wiley had done it.
We made it. 1,000 miles. Hey,
buddy.
Woo! Jeff. Bro, best adventure of my life. Thank you, sir.
I couldn't begin to tell you.
The dreams have come true, man.
Woo! Woo!
Where we go from here?
All right. Rewarded with a pin, finishers celebrate all day long. Hour after hour, as the clock ticks down to the 32-hour time limit. In spite of being denied a record-breaking 10th overall Baja 1000, Mark McMillan crossed the finish line with a big grin on his face.
I told you I'd make it back for you.
Yeah.
We don't give up. We don't give up.
Proving that even rich, handsome guys don't give up, Alan Pfluger crossed the line with a big aloha smile.
It was up front. Then the front broke off.
Wine's
never quit.
That's true.
Same hula girl,
you replaced the hula girl.
See,
okay?
No, same hula girl.
Got to get our new grass skirt, but
yeah, I like
that's
it.
All right.
Kind of had to do some dusting. The
ukulele ones last, the other ones lose their arms, so it's all good.
Although there are many examples of Baja's never say die spirit, few have as good a time as the off-road version of the Terminator, Al Hogan. He'd be able to find pieces of his truck all the way back to the starting line. Nothing left but his pride and his sense of the obvious.
Tired, man.
What can you say? That's Baja. Sometimes the course wins.
Well, we only got 364 more days to the next one, right?
One after the other, they would cross the line. Dusty and tired, but overjoyed they finished. As the day wore on, there were still many on the course. Amy Thomas searched for the BC-10, which was still 100 miles out, headed for home in a race against the clock. And only seconds behind the women's team came Eric Solorzano's Volkswagen bouncing up the goat trail outside of Trinidad, hoping to finish, just to finish. While the Volkswagen wouldn't make it, the women's team would, with 10 minutes to spare. It was Mouse's drive to finish that had us worried the night before. We decided to send helmet cameraman Louis Franco out to find him, hoping he'd bring him back. Mouse was up, but not in the best condition. Lucky for him, Jeff Kaplan happened by.
I just saw him out of my peripheral vision. He told me that the next place I could see somebody, tell him that he was stuck there. And I just told him to follow me in. But we ended up going fast, really fast. Surprisingly fast for one light.
At speed near 100 miles an hour, Kaplan paced Mouse for over 20 miles until finding Scott Dunleavy.
Motorcycle's junk. I beat the thing into submission, so it was at least halfway rideable. He's goofy. He didn't even know if it's left or right. He'd hit the wall, he pushed through the wall, and kept going and going and going and got bit. And now it was a matter to get back to some sort of semblance of focus to get to bring it all the way home.
Got so tired.
McCoy, 18 hours, 2 minutes, 40 seconds. The 6th motorcycle to finish, the 12th overall vehicle. Not too bad. There were 246 vehicles behind him. There's a connection between people who make a commitment, a passion shared.
This wasn't just a solo effort. Might have been a solo effort as far as me and being in the saddle, but the collective effort was about my friends and family carrying me through it. And that's why it means so much to me that we all did it together.
Congratulations, Ma!
Thank you guys for letting us in your country.
The
race here. Anybody know where a good taco stand is? Cold beer. Cold beer and a taco is what I need.
Have meat on today.
It's a hell of a race. A race against the clock in a country that defies time. In a competition which forges lifelong friendships. Maybe only one drives, but they search for glory as a team. They look for it in the win, in the finish, and in the attempt, because the journey can justify the destination.
The one word, the Baja 1000 for me, it's love.
It's romantic.
It's awesome.
Tough.
Exciting.
A challenge.
Perseverance.
Tough.
Patience.
A lot of patience.
It's beautiful.
For me, it's just adventure. I mean, it's such an adventure.
Well, I got a different word than I think about it, and it's more mystical. It is mystical. It has a sense and a spirit of its own.
I think it's just life. And one day, you kind of get to experience everything. You get great things happen and terrible things happen, and it's how you deal with them at the end of the night. It's like life.
1,000 miles in 32 hours can be a lifetime in a blink. Do they find glory? I couldn't say, because the race never ends. But if they do, it's in the dust, and it won't wash away.
What it is like a flying couch. You know? That was probably the best way to explain it.
It's like sitting in your living room.
Yeah, the living room and the flying couch and just stay out of the big ditches.
Buddy, this is my buddy Steve Matson.
Yeah, right, baby. Oh, yeah. Baja. Oh.
He really wants to make the cut.
I want to be in the movie.
He's not going to
be in the
movie.
I want to be in the big pictures. Baja. Oh.
And as soon as we turned off the little light on the generator, we saw that the floor was moving. We turned it on, and it was solid cockroaches. Oh, my God. So I ran out to my pack and got a gallon of gas and ran a moat around my chest. And me and Bob were hitting asleep in the same bed. I said, we're probably going to get asphyxiated, but at least we're not going to get eaten. And in the morning, there was a bunch of melted cockroaches.
I'm Don. I'm one of the sound mixers.
Right now, we're making up cables, custom cables for each camera. We've got one of Don's, what kind of mic is that?
Octava 48-volt mic, which is a super cardioid pattern.
Check, check, check. Check, check, 1, 2.
Check on this side, right? Check on left side.
Check, check. When those motorcycles turn on, it's loud, loud.
We're yelling right now because we've got a bunch of loud motorcycles back here. So we're just checking the levels and see how they're doing. How's that?
These cameras have a lot of switches that need to be in the right places, we discovered.
What was Scorsese do? Talk real fast, we know that. How the damn Joe Pesci hit all these guys in the head with a shovel?
Bad.
Bad. Where are we going to get Joe Pesci? Had a lot of shovel.
That editor, Dana Brown, oh, he's trying to cover up Matzinger. Which, I got it, I can still make out Matt's character. Hey.
Ha ha! Oh!
Do you mind constant paparazzi?
That's like a camera.
You know what you do? You can fix your hair in this thing.
Hey, there's a camera behind that big piece of glass.
Dana's crazy. This is the biggest, craziest movie ever made. Ever.
Yeah. Sorry, man. I'm just going, whoa, I'm going to knock that guy in his butt. And I saw him.
Well, you only missed him by about 12 inches.
Yeah.
What were you shooting, hair producer?
We were shooting a little place called Valle da Trinidad. See how it spit fly like that?
Yeah.
That's the effect that I have. Who said there wasn't special effects on this movie?
Is that
you speak
Spanish?
It is. It's a hug you get.
First time we're going off-road. So driving.
We're attempting the off-road race.
Here we go. Off-road.
And we're off.
Here we go. Matzinger in the front.
Do it.
We're on. Matzinger.
Here we go.
Matzinger. Here we go.
Safe at last.
Hey, I think we're definitely trophy truck material now.
Yeah. Robbie Gordon, we got your number.